I was born bold.
The new Big Bertha family from Callaway Golf. Engineered for distance, any way you swing it.
Breakfast on SEM.
It is SEM Breakfast, Sam Edmund and Jordan Lewis. Had a lot of fun with you this week, Geordie. We love getting up early and getting stuck into it, and hope you've been able to put up with us for the week. We're going to go out with a bang, though, because the McCafe menu has still got some juicy items on it. Ben Horne, hasn't it been fascinating, the so-called cricket war between the broadcaster at Channel 7 and Cricket Australia about what is fair and reasonable in this most unprecedented of environments at the moment with COVID. So Benny Horne, the journalist from up there at the Daily Telegraph, will bring us up to speed with that. And Mitch Wallace, the rejuvenated, reinvented Western Bulldogs forward at 20 past eight as well. But it's time now for the conversation starter. With thanks to Kia, the all-new Kia Sorento has landed. Join us anytime, though, on this game or anything footy-related, because we've got two more lots of rounds of golf, 18 holes of golf to give away with the complimentary drinks, of course, thanks to our friends at Club Mandalay, that must-play club in Melbourne's north. So 1-300-736-736. Best callers get the chocolates, or 0433-98-11-16. Last night's game, scores were level at three-quarter time, and I think at that stage, North Melbourne had five more scoring shots. Let's say a bit about North Melbourne's effort last night, or should we be worried about West Coast, albeit they're going to get a glut of players back as well?
Yeah, I think North Melbourne's effort was really good, and they played with a lot of energy, and they flicked the ball around, probably overused it a little bit, but I think, as Reshaw said, their endeavour was there, and that was clear to see at home sitting on the couch. You could see that they were they had the energy, they're up for the fight against a side who was playing for a top four position. So, you know, West Coast had a lot to play for, but the side who looked the better side, especially in the first half, was North Melbourne. Now, they just didn't have the class, I suppose, to capitalise on their dominance. And West Coast, as all good sides do, they hang in there and they know where the finish line is. So they get themselves to a position where they can strike. And it was Oscar Allen in the final quarter that got them over the line, really. But, you think from a North Melbourne point of view that you would love to see that on a week-to-week basis. So you can, I think you can cop losses if
with an effort,
if your side's playing like that, like they're trying. You could see that they were trying to do things, and it was just a bit of polish that hurt them in the end.
Yeah, it did. They'll rue some of those mischances. But as you say, the baseline effort was there. But the Eagles, they've just momentarily anyway leapfrogged Geelong and Richmond into the third. So they now kick back at that home quarantine in Perth. They leave this morning, of course, and just hope that one of the Cats or the Tigers slip up and they can snare the double chance. Otherwise, they've got a fifth-place finish and a home final at Optus Stadium. You mentioned Oscar Allen. He turned the game in the last quarter. Liam Ryan as well. Just those moments of polish in front of goal were the difference. The Eagles midfield was assaulted again, though. They won the centre clearances 10-4. Put that down to the knick-knack factor, I guess, if you like. But they had defenders playing on the wings. And we'll come back to them in a moment. They are in desperate need of reinforcements, I think, with some bigger fish to fry. But Reece Shaw, the North Melbourne coach, geez, he's endured a torrid season at the top of the football club, but he was impressed last night by his side's effort despite going down to the Eagles.
It was a really good performance, I thought. We've been smashed from pillar to post for a while now, but we've worked hard, and tonight the boys were really consistent over four quarters, and I think it showed how the game was played, that was we dominated for long periods of time. West Coast took their chances, and that's probably where it sat.
Off the temper text, North have found another one. Flynn Perez, the kid's ball use on both feet is class.
Yeah, it stands out when a player can use a non-dominant foot and it not look awkward. It stands out, but you're right, and Reshaw was right. But that's the difference. So a side dominates for a period of time, can't capitalise, and a quality side like West Coast take their opportunities. So, if you look at through the possessions, they had nearly 100 more uncontested possessions. So they got the ball out in the open.
I think a lot of the keepings off.
Yeah, a lot of their play this year seems like it was done in a contest. So they got the ball out in the open and tried to use that to their advantage. They probably overused the ball by hands a little bit. They nearly had 80-odd more handballs. So they flicked it around a little bit to try and, you know, get it outside the contest. But, yeah, that was a difference. Just a bit of class at the end by Oscar Allen and Liam Ryan that saw them over the line.
No, West Coast intercept game so strong, isn't it? And they did their best to avoid that at all costs. Tim's in Brighton. I think he wants to talk about Reece Shaw. How you doing, Timmy?
Yeah, good. Thank you, Sam, and good morning, Geordie. I want to just ask you fellas, when Reece Shaw was appointed coach, there was great anticipation. I'm not a North Melbourne supporter, by the way. There was great anticipation about this coming year and the excitement of what they could do under Reece Shaw, this new energy around Reece Shaw. Now, you know, a season later, about a week ago when he was interviewed, he looked like a broken man and quite, you know, down and out and so on. Was he really blind not to see who was not at the club to support him, or that there was a lot of new key players or key position people at North Melbourne? Did he not see what was not there for in those key positions like Kevin Sheedy or Neil Baum or someone like that?
Yeah, I think sometimes you can't see the forest from the trees, Sammy, can you? And he was involved in that environment, but I think also he would look back on his year as coach and put his hand up and said he probably could have coached better. I think when we saw him take over the position from Brad Scott late in the season, they did play with that sense of freedom. Now, when you get that extra responsibility about coming the senior coach, you feel like you need to control a lot more, I suppose. And they played like that. They played like they were playing within limits, that you didn't see that free-flowing game. You didn't see that energy that what we saw last year. And I think it usually takes, and just speaking, I think, from Stewie Jew's point of view, you come to a club and it probably takes you a year or two to get people in that you want in. And sometimes those people are contracted at other clubs. So you need to bide your time a little bit until you get access to them and bring them over. And you probably spend a couple of years trying to assemble the team that you think is right for you and the team that complements your coaching style. So he would review this year, and there would certainly be things that he would see now in hindsight that he may not have seen at the start.
Good on you, Timmy. Hang on the line. We'll flick you around a golf and the complimentary drink at Club Mandalay, that must-play course in Melbourne's North. Appreciate your call this morning. Dave's in Mernda. How you doing, Dave?
Yeah, morning, boys. Hey, I just wanted to ask you sort of a hypothetical question with that eighth position. Obviously, the talk is all about West Coast, you know, whether they can make it or not. Are Melbourne and GWS really going to want to play for that eighth spot just to go all the way?
You just broke up there. I think you were going to say go all the way there to get pumped, or words to that effect. I think you always want to play finals. You've got to buy a ticket to win the raffle, don't you, Dave? And Melbourne can absolutely make it. They've got to beat Essendon, of course. That goes without saying. And then they've got to hope the Western Bulldogs slip up. I think St Kilda can still make it if they lose. That percentage is probably beyond them. But Melbourne, a percentage of 106.2. The Western Bulldogs, percentage of 103.9. Melbourne win, Dogs lose, they're in.
They're in. Yep.
And they're going to Perth.
Oh, give me a finals belting any year over not playing finals.
Absolutely. Now, you got to get there, Dave, but appreciate the call. And look, good on you for making it too. We'll sling you around. I'm just throwing these rounds of golf around like confetti. Just got a stack of them, Dave. Hang on the line. Another 18 holes of golf headed your way, and a complimentary beverage as well. Club Mandalay doing great things. That must-play course in Melbourne's North. Just some breaking news very quickly, Geordie, aside from our domestic game. Gareth Bale will fly to London from Spain on Friday. That's UK time later on today, of course, before sealing a move back to Tottenham Hotspur.
I've become the expert after watching that one episode. I knew who Gareth Bale was, and their other striker in.
Come on then,
Harry Kane. There we go.
Oh, you just made it.
I knew those two guys, but I didn't know a few of the rest of them. But now I feel like I know. I feel like I'm part of the team.
The Welsh Wizard, they call him. So Spurs fans, you'd be delighted to have him back. Gareth Bale occupying the wing for Jose Mourinho's side going forward this season. West Coast, they were already depleted. They're sweating on injuries to so many star players. And then their key man, their star forward, Josh Kennedy, landed awkwardly from a marking contest late in the second term. He tweaked that left ankle in the process and he didn't return. Well, Adam Simpson, it was the first question he was asked after the match.
I think he's okay. It's a new injury to his ankle. Yeah, he's walking around, so I think it was more a precaution than anything, but we're going to see how he pulls up tomorrow. So it could be just a garden variety roll, but We won't know till he pulls up.
Is that where you got that saying from?
Yep.
You said garden variety.
Did you like
start?
That?
I hadn't heard it before.
Oh, no, garden variety is a well-worn term, and they're hoping that's exactly what it is, and that the week off we'll see him line up in that elimination final.
Yeah, I think so. I think It didn't look, and as listening to Adam Simp, didn't look that bad, but their injury list is quite extensive to key players, isn't it? So, Luke Shuey's coming back, Dom Sheed's back. McGovern, you don't necessarily think he'll be there for the first final, or he may be.
He went on to say, Adam Simpson, he thinks they'll get Hutchings back, Jeddah, Shuey, Redden, and Cripps, obviously, who has just had a little baby boy. They all sound very likely. Elliot Yeo sounds like he's no chance. And McGovern only an outside chance with the hamstring. But he did some walk-running sessions yesterday, Jeremy McGovern, and Adam Simpson said he'd definitely be knocking on my door. So that's a delicate decision for them to make in terms of...
It's a do-or-die clash, and probably depends who they play, whether they need that type of key defender. Do you roll the dice without the second chance if they don't make top four?
So say it is the Western Bulldogs travelling west. Would it be...
You probably just nearly back Barass in to man up on Norton.
Yeah.
And because they are a smaller forward line, you may tend to go a bit smaller in your defensive end.
Okay, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I want to ask about the conditions up there in Queensland. We worry about it, don't we? I mean, there doesn't appear any consistency with the dew factor. Clearly, when it's a cloudless night, you're going to get dew. And when there's overcast conditions, it's going to be drier. And the wind is a factor as well. It's not rocket science. But the difference between no dew and dew up there seems to be so stark. And when the dew does fall, it might as well have been raining for half an hour.
Yeah, and the difference is probably 10 minutes between
no
dew and dew. So I think, players have to be watching the games that have previously been up there and prepare themselves. That's all that you can do and say, okay, it may be a dry game in the first half, but if it becomes dewy in the second half, you've got to change the way you play. You've got to treat it like a wet weather game. So you've got to mark on your chest. You've got to take ground and not overuse the ball when you have the opportunity. Yes, you just can't play the way that you played in the first half. So,
which is an adjustment for a side like West Coast because they play a possession style game.
Yeah,
Geelong do as well.
But you've got to have adaptability in your game style as well. So for in the event that you play in a wet weather game or a game that is increased with dew, the slipperiness, you've got to be able to adapt, and that's most sides can play a wet weather game. That's probably the easiest game to play if you just want to take territory and it be messy, so you can adapt that.
The Eagles have actually had the Eskies out with the soapy water at training and dunking the balls in there to try to get soapy balls in there to get used to it. So there we go. But he gave an insight just quickly before the break, Adam Simpson, into the conditions up there and signalled something of a warning sign for finals.
You're not going to see pretty footy. It doesn't matter who you are. So you do have to adapt. And we started the game tonight thinking that we'd have a go at just using the whole ground and trying to play our way. But that's just the way night games here are going to be. We get Eskies out every training session and got the soapy water, and we're trying to adapt as best we can.
What does it mean for the grand final? 1-300-736-736. History making at night at the Gabba. Is it going to be 6-4 wins? That is the ultimate fear. The all-new game-changing Kia Sorento has landed. You can find out more at kia.com.au. Plenty more footy to dissect with your company as well on the other side of this.
I was born bold.
The new Big Bertha family from Callaway Golf. Engineered for distance, any way you swing it.
Breakfast on SEN.
Oh dear. Justin Thomas still with the outright lead at the US Open over there in New York. Back in the clubhouse, of course, but still has the outright lead at 5-under. A bit of housekeeping quickly. Gents, please report the Smith payout correctly. He was successful in an insurance claim on an eligible event with a third-party life insurer. It's not a quote-unquote damages payout, and no party has admitted fault. That's from Ray and St Kilda. Appreciate the clarification, Ray. We did mention MLC, but perhaps we weren't quite clear enough on that. And in regards to West Coast, what do they do if they have to go back to Queensland? We're told off the temper text, the Queensland border is open to WA. It's only going to WA. You have to quarantine. I'll take that at face value. Having said all that, they're probably likely to pay Port Adelaide if they do finish fourth anyway, we assume. So they will be
Brisbane,
going to Adelaide. Or they could still be Brisbane, of course, who have the Blues in the last round. Well, we read yesterday that a truce was reached somewhat anyway between Channel 7 and Cricket Australia. It's been it's been bitter at times, this broadcast battle, but it does still remain a race against time to reach a deal that will keep this dispute out of the courts. And a man who's followed it each and every step of the way is a cricket guru from the Daily Telegraph, Benny Horne. How you doing, Ben?
G'day, guys. I'm good. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Absolute pleasure. Well, we read your story with great interest. You've called it a ceasefire descending upon cricket's broadcasting war, but it's certainly not over yet. Where's it sitting at the moment, do you think?
Yeah, look, there was talks yesterday between Channel 7 and Cricket Australia, and they seemed constructive, or at least a lot more constructive than they have been. But basically, early October is the point when Channel 7 can go to a tribunal and get an independent assessment on the value of the rights. So, look, that's what Cricket Australia's got to avoid, essentially. If they can come up with some kind of renegotiated deal that satisfies Seven before then it could prevent sort of it getting even uglier. But, you know, I guess the question is, what would Channel 7 be comfortable with as a cut, given, you know, they seem quite, you know, their desperation to, I guess, get out of the deal.
So for the uneducated, to boil it all down and simplify things, it's a $450 million contract. Fox and Channel 7 obviously want to pay less, as we're seeing here and right around the world when it comes to the TV rights. Now, Cricket Australia aren't keen on taking less. So can you simplify it for us? What are Cricket Australia willing to accept? Do we have a line of sight on whether they're willing to give anything here?
No, not yet. Although if the talks were constructive yesterday, you'd have to think that there was some sign that they are willing to renegotiate. But yeah, that is essentially the issue, just how far apart the two parties are. You know, Channel 7 and Fox Sports, for that matter, are claiming that they're not going to get the value that they're owed, particularly on the Big Bash this year. Cricket Australia are adamant that there is no value element in the contract. If they provide the full schedule, that's all they need to do, and they're very confident they'll do that. So they are at absolute opposites at the moment. So that's the challenge, you know, can that turn around in 2 weeks' time? But we've seen the NRL and the AFL both had to renegotiate their deals at the onset of the COVID-19 situation. So, you know, that would be the resolution if Cricket Australia is willing to renegotiate the deal. And as I said then, the only issue is what would Channel 7 actually accept?
It's a baptism of fire for the new Cricket Australia, or the interim Cricket Australia CEO, Nick Hockley, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, none of this is Nick's fault, and he's, you know, navigating it as best he can. But unfortunately, that often seems to be the case at Cricket Australia. There's these huge issues that break out, and the person who's in the hot seat hasn't really been responsible for what's taken place. But look, in this case, you know, they do have a contract with Channel 7, and Channel 7's trying to get out of it. So in that sense, you know, Channel 7 signed the deal knowing what they were getting into. But, you know, as we've seen with other sports, COVID-19 has presented these financial difficulties for everyone. And, you know, it does change the equation. It's not, you know, if you have Big Bash matches happening at neutral venues, smaller crowds, if Boxing Day Test is somewhere else other than Melbourne, it's not what you signed up for. So, you know, it has, you know, it's set the cat amongst the pigeons, and, you know, it's going to be an interesting time for cricket, given they've already lost money now. Both broadcasters didn't pay the full amount earlier this week.
Benny, what's your gut feel? Do you think there will be a resolution and we'll see the cricket broadcast on Channel 7 this year? And if not Channel 7, I suppose, who do you think may take over those rights?
Look, it's a difficult question to answer. I mean, I don't know whether there's any certain direction yet, but I guess the complication, if it does go to courts, particularly at this particular time when, you know, in Melbourne at least, it'd be very difficult to get into a courtroom. I guess even if it does go to that kind of dispute, perhaps it would draw out long enough that this summer would still be on Seven. But, you know, I do expect that, you know, at some point this will come to a head, and there's 4 years to run on the deal. In terms of the other suitors, Channel 9 would certainly be interested in Test cricket again, but at a reduced price. I mean, they're not going to get anything near what they've got from Seven, from Channel 9. There's talk that Channel 10 would be interested in the Big Bash, but again, their financial position has taken a massive hit this year too. So I don't know what position they're in. And so the issue confronting Cricket Australia is that if they do go to another broadcaster, it's just not going to be at the same price. So it's a huge financial shortfall if that's the case. So, yeah, look, it's a tough one to predict, but, you know, I guess just you look at how long these court proceedings can take. Perhaps we will see this summer on Seven.
So, Ben, there's no doubt, unfortunately, it's going to be a diluted product. We know that. I mean, you speak to both parties, though. You speak to both sides of the fence. I'd be keen to, at the risk of putting you on the spot, what do you think is a fair and reasonable outcome? I mean, is it going to take a bit of give and take from both sides? And how do you see, what do you see as being the suitable outcome, the right outcome?
Look, it's hard to get in. You know, I'm not good with dollars. I don't know what the money amount would be, but what you can safely say is the Big Bash is the absolute centerpiece of all this. You know, I think both parties are quite comfortable with Test match cricket. And, you know, there's obviously, you know, certain things that may have to change there. Like we mentioned, perhaps the Boxing Day Test won't be in Melbourne, although increasingly it looks like it could be. But the Big Bash is the issue. And it's not just a COVID-19 issue. You know, sure, there's the concerns this year about the smaller crowds and less players. But the issue that the broadcasters have with the Big Bash actually goes beyond that. You know, they've been complaining about the value for some time. Cricket Australia did a review into the Big Bash earlier this year, sort of proposing these changes that they were going to make. And, you know, in their defence, they were going to make them. But just the pandemic has made a lot of those changes impossible to enforce. So what will have to happen is a commitment to these kind of changes to the Big Bash, because it's not just an issue to do with the pandemic. There's, you know, the both broadcasters feel like the value of the Big Bash is diminished regardless. So that's the centrepiece of it, and that's what Cricket Australia is going to have to convince them of.
Benny, what are you hearing just on the Boxing Day test? I mean, the Melbourne Cricket Club conceded defeat on the AFL Grand Final some time ago. They've had their head down when it comes to keeping the Boxing Day test in Melbourne for some time now, and Dan Andrews is on record recently as saying they hope to have crowds at sporting events in this part of the world at that stage. But what are you hearing in terms of where it will be played? And if it is here, how many people might be able to go?
Well, I mean, the latest that I heard last week sounded quite positive about the MCG. I mean, you look at the numbers coming down in Melbourne and, you know, it seems like, you know, a real desperation to sort of give the people of Melbourne something to look forward to, which is great. And, you know, you want the Boxing Day test being in Melbourne. I'd say the issue is what the border situation is between Victoria and New South Wales, or Victoria and Queensland at the time, because I don't think the difficulty will be playing the match in Melbourne. It'll be where can you go after that. And Melbourne's the second test. There's two tests after that. So you'd need to be able to get the team, you know, presumably to Sydney to play the third test after that. So I think that's the big issue. But we saw earlier in the year, you know, at the very start of the AFL season, you know, when you did have teams in Melbourne, they were able to come up to Sydney and back in a bubble. And so if the numbers keep coming down and we sort of get back to that kind of stage, you know, it's entirely possible. So I think Adelaide's there as the standby option, and that makes sense because you don't have to move anyone around. They'll be there from the first test anyway.
Yep.
But, yeah, look, I'd be optimistic. I think Melbourne can do it.
Benny, appreciate you joining us this morning. And if the cricket hadn't given you plenty to write about, GWS certainly have up there in Sydney as well. So we appreciate you jumping on the line this morning.
No worries, guys. I really appreciate it. Cheers.
Ben Horne there, Daily Telegraph cricket guru, also dabbles in a bit of footy as well. Jordan Lewis, plenty happening there. He was with us for Chemist Warehouse. Get half-price big brand vitamins and cosmetics at Chemist Warehouse. It's a complex issue, but yeah, at the same time, it's a simple issue. You know, it's a dilemma that sports and their broadcasts are facing all over the country and all over the world. And plenty of you this morning out there have had your say on it. We'll read through all of your texts when it comes to cricket and the dispute with Channel 7 when we come back from this very short break.
I was born bold.
The new Big Bertha family from Callaway Golf. Engineered for distance any way you swing it.
Breakfast on SEM.
Great to have your company on SEM Breakfast. Sam Edmund, Jordan Lewis with you on a fun Friday as we go into the last hour here. We're into the last round of the home and away season as well. And it doesn't get any bigger if you're a Western Bulldogs supporter than Sunday night. Your team are playing for a spot in the finals. They're doing it against a pretty tricky opponent, the informed Fremantle Dockers. It takes place at Kazali Stadium in Cairns Sunday. And a man who's been pivotal to the Dogs this year, he's going to play his 150th in this game as well. His name is Mitch Wallace. Thanks for joining us, Mitch.
Thanks, Sammy. Thanks for having me, mate.
Absolute pleasure, and great to have your company. We appreciate it. I've got to ask you, this is a massive game, and you've got a milestone thrown on top of it as well, which I imagine would be the last thing you're thinking about. This is a final before the finals.
It is. It is like an elimination final. We're treating it that way, and we have for the last sort of 3 weeks, because every game's been a big game, and that's the position that we put ourselves in throughout the year. So yeah, look, very excited. It's in our control, and we've done it before. We've proven in past years that we can win, away from home and in big games. So it's exciting, mate. But like you said, it's do or die this weekend.
What do you make of Kazzaley Stadium in Cairns? You wouldn't have ever played a game there, I don't think. It's proven to provide some very, very tricky conditions, some difficult conditions, and the Dockers make you earn it at the moment.
Yeah, we have. We actually have had a little bit of experience. We played a game there a season for about 4 years in a row, and we won most of our games. We played against Gold Coast when they were still trying to, start to be a formidable side. But, mate, it's a challenging game. It's not as extreme as the Darwin surface, but it is slippery and humid. So we've become a little bit acclimatised with the weather in up on the Gold Coast in terms of the heat. But it will be a shock to the system. So the preparation in terms of the meals and hydration and sleep is going to be ultra important, which I'm sure our dietitian will touch on today.
Sammy, Jordan Lewis here. Congratulations on your form throughout the year, mate. And Sammy touched on big game for you guys this week, and we've been given a bit of an insight into how Bevo has coached in terms of the way he themes the week. Has he let you know what the theme may be this week?
I'm about to find out in about half an hour. So I always get excited, and how he uses his metaphors, and I'm one that gets really, a fair bit of kick and motivation off what he runs with. So I'm sure it'll be it's obviously a big game, so I'm sure it's going to be pretty intricate and have a big message behind it. But like I said, we'll get that in half an hour. But we know, as you mentioned, that the Freo have put in some really big performances over the last couple of weeks, and they're not going to be a rollover side. So we're playing for everything.
And just on yourself and your form this year, you would have learned a lot, and with maturity, you're able to look back on your career and probably think that you should have done things differently. You would admittedly be probably an over-trainer and an over-preparer. What have you learned this year with just in terms of tweaking maybe the way you approach pre-season and being able to perform at a high level in season?
Yeah, no doubt, mate. And you have to fall on your own sword, especially with the over-training bit, because it's about quality, not quantity. And you can only learn that by doing as much as you can get told as a young fella that you have to train smart and not harder. It takes years in the system to be able to understand that. But I've worked really close with Ash Hanson a lot more from a vision point of view. Obviously with the shorter breaks and 5-day breaks, 4-day breaks even, you don't have the opportunity to train physically. So watching tapes back and really working on decision making, and that's something that you get with age, with a little bit more poise and understanding and concentration in games. So that's where I feel like I've come a long way, and being able to transition into the forward line a little bit smoother than I anticipated. But I'm really excited for the future, because I've only sort of set the foundation of what I believe I can produce down there. So it's exciting, mate, but it's been a hell of a journey. But I'm looking forward to another chapter in the season just yet.
And you line up next to Aaron Norton in the forward line, and we interviewed Stephen May early on in the week, and we asked him who is your toughest opponent, and he mentioned another player. I can't quite think who it was, but he said he's quite thankful that he won't be around for too long, because he thinks Aaron Norton will be the best key position forward in the game. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think he will as well, mate. Like, he's still so young, and the ability to take a big grab, especially in today's game with so many numbers around, it just breaks open games. And really, it's such a key ingredient to team success. And Aaron's still got so much to learn, but something that's just innate is his ability to take the ball at the highest point and use his body and the timing and the fly of the ball from his younger days as a backman. So, mate, he's such an exciting talent. And I know he's signed a pretty long-term contract with the club, so I can't wait to play alongside him and watch him grow and learn and develop as a key forward, and like you said, be up there with the best in the game.
And credit has to go to you, Mitch, because you've reinvented yourself as a player. You touched on it then, but 23 goals, 10 as a forward. You've had 33 scoring shots this season. From the outside looking in, it looks as though you've really relished the move forward. I mean, how have you found it? Break it down for us.
Yeah, again, and it wasn't something that I went into the preseason last year thinking that would happen, but it's just the way that it transpired. And got thrown forward in the first couple of games and was running around like a headless chook for a while there, because it is quite challenging. But like I said, I've worked hard on my game with Ash Hanson, our forwards coach, in terms of watching lots of vision, but really embrace the role. I can speak on behalf of a lot of midfielders. When you go forward, all you're doing is waiting for your turn to go back into the midfield, and you don't really fully commit to your forward line play. So the fact that I made a real conscious effort to be called a forward line player and train that way and think that way and prepare as a forward. I think that's helped the transition forward. But like I said, I've got so much to learn and I'm really looking forward to what opportunities come in the future with more forward craft under my belt and a pre-season of training as a forward.
And you've also had a big year off the field. You've welcomed daughter Charlotte into the world this year with your wife Emily. How important, I suppose, has it been having them up there with you and having your daughter close by to watch her grow?
Yeah, and it's been everything, mate. And to be totally frank, I probably wouldn't be up here if Charlotte and Emily weren't allowed to come up, because, you know, family is the most important thing in my life, and even experiencing the little milestones that Emily and I are at the moment. You know, she's 12 weeks old now and being away with us for you know, over 10. So it's most of her life. And, you know, it's been incredible. Emily's been absolutely outstanding with how she's handled things. Obviously, there's been different obstacles and challenges that she's had to face by herself without her loving mum and dad. But, you know, together we've embraced it. We're enjoying it. And this whole hub experience has been a positive one for us. So we'll look back and be happy that we got to spend the time together, but it's definitely shaped, you know, how we're going to parent in the future. And again, we are so lucky and privileged that we got to spend this time together.
Oh, beautifully said. And the locals are loved having you up there as well, Mitch. We just got a text in here just moments ago. I just walked past Mitch Wallace walking in my local cafe with his wife and baby. I've seen him lots enjoying the outdoors while up here. Can you ask him, though, if he consider a trade to the Suns?
Oh, really? Well, I'm standing here out the front of that cafe now.
Double barrel,
it's called. Yeah. I'll give it a plug. they do make a nice coffee brew. So it is, again, we're quite lucky, and that's something that Melbourne's obviously hurting at the moment and have been through a really tough patch with the restrictions. So to be fortunate enough to do that up here with our family, to be able to go outdoors in the sunshine, we do feel privileged and don't for 1 second forget the hardships that Melbourne are going through.
Well, thankfully, we're coming out the other side, it would appear. And just getting back to your positional change, I guess while you're stationed in that forward 50, you get to look down the ground and just see something of the heir apparent and literally almost the flying mullet, Bailey Smith, buzzing around that midfield. Must give you hope for the future as well at the club.
And he's had an outstanding year. I don't think he's underrated anymore because people have realised how consistently he's been performing at such a high level. But his physical attributes, his speed, his endurance and his strength is something to marvel at for, you know, a 19-year-old. So he's got a massive future ahead of himself. Again, Geordie, like I did, he's a little bit of an overtrainer.
From an early age.
He was. So he's a little bit demented from that point of view. We'll have to pull him back one day. But again, mate, he's got all the, like I said, the right attributes and a really good attitude to his footy and really wants to win. So I think that's probably the main thing. And he's a really important part of our midfield group already.
Best rig at the club, wouldn't he have?
Oh, by the length of the Flemington Strait, he does.
If you're weighing your food as a teenager, Geordie, yeah, you're a rare bear.
It's a bit over the top. It wasn't what I did.
not comparing this weekend to finals and grand finals and premierships that the club's been lucky enough to win in recent times, but do you think some of that big game experience that's still some of the list of experienced, if you like, Mitch, will hold you in good stead, because it's the season's on the line. I mean, there's no other way to look at Sunday.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I'm lucky enough to play my milestone this weekend, but we've got a fair few players around that 150 game mark. I know Libba, Bonte, Jacko's played it this year, JJ, Lockie Hunter. So there's a few players really reaching their prime in terms of, you know, games played and experience. So it has to help. Again, the challenge is in front of us, and the proof will be in the pudding when we play. But I think we're in a really good position to attack this game, knowing the stakes that are out there.
And just quickly, what does it mean to play 150 games for yourself? Or probably, you know, after the leg injury and getting over that and wondering whether you'll play footy again, to reach this milestone, you must be pretty proud.
Yeah, I'm pretty chuffed. Obviously, it's a long time. It's taken me 10 years. There's been a fair few injuries, but you know, the connection that I had with the club growing up, obviously Steve playing, you know, for over 14 seasons with the Bulldogs and being an avid footy follower, but, you know, Bulldog, a true Bulldog at heart, and then being able to be drafted with Tom Liberatore as an 18-year-old and then go through that whole process, you know, to be out, looking back on it now, I probably won't truly reflect until the season's done on the 150 milestone, but I'm just so proud and happy to be part of that environment and be part of a club that I love so much. So hopefully, like I said before, there's another big chapter in our story, in our history this year. But again, once the season finishes, I'll look back fondly and be, you know, pretty chuffed that I've been able to achieve this feat.
Oh, you're a great ambassador for your club, Mitch. Just a quick text from Steve before we let you go. I met Mitch a few years back at Casey when he was trying to sneak off on crutches with his broken leg, but he spent 5 minutes for me and my boy, probably the nicest AFL player I've ever met. 150 games, hopefully plenty more still to come.
Yeah, thanks, gents. Have a good one.
Mitch Wallace there up in Queensland ahead of that must-win game for the Dogs on Sunday. Game 150 for him as well against the Fremantle Dockers.
Yeah, well done to him. And you can just hear just the acceptance of role. And there's no doubt that plays a big part in a player going into a different position and accepting that is the role that the team and the club requires them to play.
That's why the father-son rule is just so good and should never, ever go anywhere. I'm a long-time Bulldog diehard, and Mitch Wallace is far and away my favourite player. He epitomises the Bulldog spirit. Mitch Wallace is with us for Cleanaway as well. Up your disposal efficiency with Cleanaway. Let's take a little break. Back shortly.